Behind the Badge, Illinois, giving you the inside scoop on public safety and those who protect and serve.
I'd like to welcome everybody to another episode of Behind the Badge, Illinois. I'm David Hochberg, your host. We have chiefs located throughout the great state of Illinois. Chief Brogman down in O'Fallon. We got Chief Jogman up in Highland Park. Chief Bird out in DeKalb. This show is sponsored by the fine people at Team Hochberg. If you're looking to purchase a new home, refinance your existing home, give us a call. We have substantial discounts to all law enforcement, first responders, veterans, and their families. So give us a call, 855-56-DAVID. Go to 56david.com. Now that that business is out of the way, we've got three guests located throughout the great state of Illinois with our chiefs. So we're going to start off and throw it down to AJ, who's going to introduce our topic and why it's important and what the organization's doing to show respect and recognitions for all the civilian workers that work in the police departments throughout the great state of Illinois. Go ahead, AJ, you're up.
Thanks, David. So yes, the Illinois Association of Chiefs of Police, we have decided that there aren't any days in the year that really honor civilian personnel in law enforcement field. And unfortunately, not a lot of people know that there are so many of our civilian personnel in the law enforcement field, and we want to make sure that we recognize them. They've always play a pivotal role in our criminal justice system, and they provide a lot of support, a lot of expertise in a lot of different areas, and just a lot of essential services are done by our civilian personnel in law enforcement. So we have decided we're going to do a Law Enforcement Civilian Personnel Appreciation Week. Our very first one kicks off on Sunday. We're going to have this every year. It's going to be the first full week of June, starting on that Sunday, going through that Saturday. So again, it kicks off on Sunday, and we're going to be making this an annual thing because we appreciate all of the dedicated civilian personnel at our law enforcement agencies. They do a lot of great work. They work hard. And they deserve some recognition. And this initiative is really Chief Jogman's baby. So I'm going to kind of let him take over and talk a little bit more about that.
Good, Lou.
Thanks. All right. Thanks, AJ. Thanks, Dave. Yeah, exciting show today. We're really excited to have our guests on with us today. For me, it's been a journey to get here to really recognize all the hard work that our civilian law enforcement folks do. Really, I share this with my team, but you know, our military wouldn't be as successful as they are without all the support folks, right? All the people who cook the food or bring the ammo up or gas or the trucks. I mean, all that stuff is needed as a cohesive team to really be successful in the mission. So similarly for us in law enforcement, all these different roles, and there are a lot of different types of roles that are out there in different police departments that are not police officers. I mean, the police officers in the uniform are typically the face of the department. I think people equate that. But it's really important for our residents in the state of Illinois to know that we have some unbelievably dedicated workers and employees and people who contribute to public safety in a variety of different ways. And today we've brought a couple of different people from different kind of disciplines to showcase what's going on in each department. And so, as AJ said, as president 2 years ago, you know, really wanted to work on coming up with some type of a recognition. There are so many different days of recognition for police officers. Please thank a police officer day, Memorial Week. Firefighters have theirs. Our telecommunicators have theirs. Administrative assistants, some have theirs. There's a lot of different ones, but as a general category of law enforcement civilian staff, we thought, boy, really important to have those folks feel the value that we truly feel. So today we're here to do that and to kind of, again, showcase the different things that are going on at each department. So I'll just start by introducing and we can go around. I've got with me CSO Sean Hobson. And again, we're all about acronyms. So CSO, for those of you that are watching, is Community Service Officer. And I'll introduce him, and I think we'll go around in a minute and talk about, you know, a little of their background and everything. But with me is CSO Sean Hobson.
Good morning. Thank you guys for having me. Like Chief said, I am a community service officer in Highland Park. And a little bit about my background, how I got started. I was blessed to get a scholarship at Northern Illinois to play football. And so, of course, the goal for every football player is to make it to the next level. But, you know, I got injured, so I kind of had to pivot and think about, you know, what the next step of my career was. And it's actually not, you know, very interesting how I got into it. I just ended up looking to apply, you know, for any job that I could. And Northwest University was starting a pilot program with community service officers. And I actually applied for it in 06. And so I was driving down the street one day, a year later almost, and I got a phone call from them. And I was like, who is this? What did I apply for? And, you know, they just kind of jogged my memory about applying for the job. So I applied, I got it. And that was in 07. And like I said, we started the pilot program for the University of Northwestern. And that's how my CSO career kind of started. And then I was blessed 14 years later to become a CSO at the City of Highland Park. So that's pretty much where it landed for me.
Well, I just have to warn you, we can't start talking football because then Chief Bird will start telling us about his running back days in high school and how he was almost all state.
Absolutely.
Almost a D1 athlete like you. But he wasn't all state and he didn't make it D1. So we won't go down that path. But thank you for sharing your story. Let's go. And we'll just bounce around the state here. Chief Bruggeman, you want to introduce the lady next to you, Ebony, and what is she and what is her position?
Yeah, so I've got Ebony Clemens with me today, and Ebony is now acting as our evidence custodian. She's been with our police agency for 17 and a half, 18 years now. Started out as a records clerk, and I'm going to full disclosure here. She's cross-trained as a telecommunicator, so she really already had her week with the telecommunicators at the beginning of May. So she's kind of double-dipping today and next week. But yeah, her main role is as a records clerk and now as our evidence custodian. So, Ebony, have a few things you want to say? How'd you get into the business here?
So I actually did not set out to get into law enforcement. I originally was looking to get into journalism and to become a news anchor, either that or a meteorologist. So my background is customer service, retail, and right before I came here, I was a debt collector and I garnished wages. So the company sold and they were going to do away with some positions, and my position was on the chopping block. So I started to look and see other opportunities and saw the position for the records clerk for the city of Oak Allen. And that started my journey in law enforcement.
She fell in love with it immediately. Yep. She's been with us ever since.
Yes.
It's been a blessing every day to have Ebony. A wonderful worker. So
I've done retail sales and records and in Oak Allen Police Department. Very, very tight correlation into those two things and debt collecting as well. All right, so we're going to come back to you in a little bit. We're going to go over to Chief Bird up in DeKalb with I have it written down here, Melissa. You want to introduce Melissa to everybody, Chief Bird?
Yes. So, first of all, Lou, this is amazing, and thanks for spearheading this and you and AJ and working with this, because this is important to recognize our civilian personnel. We know, of course, we could not do our job without them. They are the pillars that hold up the police department in a lot of places. So talk about Melissa. I just want to give you a little bit of a framework. When I first arrived here 3 years ago, the administrative assistant at the time for the chief had probably, 32, 33 years, maybe? So institutional knowledge, she had it. She was 33 years or so on the job. She was already told her husband, hey, I'm going to retire. So when I took over, I had her for 2 months and she retired on. And she took all her institutional knowledge with her. So I'm like, wow. So I'm like, I'm starting new. And then I had to pick someone to take her place. And I mean, Melissa hands down was the best candidate to do that. She had already worked in the records division for a few years. And then she had to come up and into the chief's office and take over for someone who had been here 33 years. So she ordered her own steps. Like I tell people all the time, you're not replacing anybody. You're not stepping in anyone's shoes. You order your own steps. You do it your way, which she has done. And she's done an amazing job. But I'll turn it over to her and let her tell you how she kind of got involved at the DeKalb Police Department. So Melissa, I'll turn it over to you.
Hi, everybody. I'm Melissa. I started out working for the Air Force and the Army and the federal system when we lived in Germany while my husband was in the military. So I really kind of enjoyed that support and the community that you get in the military and the police. So then I came back, raised four kids, and then started working in the records division. And I really loved it down there. And then I saw this guy's resume come across, and I was like, I want to work for him. He sounds awesome. And he is. So we have a great time up here.
What was more difficult, raising four kids or getting acclimated with Chief Burt?
Oh, acclimated up here for sure, because we were both learning.
Yeah, that's right. I mean, we both came into a, you know, I was a stranger here, Dave, of course, coming from the state police. And you know, although Melissa was here, she, you know, this was, you know, being in the chief office is a little different dynamic. Like I said, she handles so much, just so much for me personally. She does, keeps me on schedule, of course. She's a master scheduler for me. Which is important. You know, I mean, I'm sure Lou and Kirk could also speak to this, that, you know, we get so busy. We have our calendar, but man, if it, without those friendly reminders, and sometimes not so friendly, sometimes Melissa's like, hey, dude, where you at? You know, like, you're supposed to be over here. And I appreciate that. And we've formed a great bond. I love her children. I go back and forth with them. We're on Facebook together. We laugh and talk about different things all the time. Her husband is a police officer, so we have that in common as well. So, you know, when you, this is the administrative assistant position is so important. You have to pick the right person. And if you can't jive and be a cohesive group together, then you're going to have a problem. So I knew when she interviewed that I picked the right person. And 3 years later, it's obvious that she was the right person to be in that seat. So I'm completely honored to have her in this position. She's my ace. Like I said earlier, she's my ace.
All right, so let's go back to Chief Brueggemann. Exactly what is I'll ask Ebony. Ebony, what exactly does your day entail? Right. And record keeping, you know, what is all of that? What does that mean? And why should the residents of O'Fallon value what you do?
So I am no longer in records. As of October of last year, I took over being the evidence custodian. So I pretty much do that and dispatch. So I am responsible for over 24,000 pieces of evidence and five different locations, and I'm still learning and trying to find a flow to this position. And we are currently in the middle of doing inventory, where we have to go through each of those pieces of evidence.
Count them. Count every single one of them to make sure they're there. What probably people don't understand, realize probably in the public, is that outside of like officer use of force, you know, which is a huge liability, your evidence room is one of your biggest liabilities within an organization. And if you don't have someone that is able to keep it organized, to keep everything accurately there, I mean, you lose cases. And, you know, the media is riddled with different terrible stories about police department evidence rooms and things that have gone wrong in them. So to have someone that is very meticulous, very detail oriented in there to keep sure, to make sure that everything is accounted for. We keep everything from cash to drugs,
guns,
to guns, to bikes, to cars, all sorts of different things. So, I mean, like I said, we have five different locations that we have evidence in, and we're a small department. I mean, we're 50 officers. I think Springfield, when I was up with Kenny Winslow, took me by. They have actual warehouses where they keep some of their evidence in offsite. And I'm sure probably DeKalb has some of those as well, because there's a lot of different rules about how long you have to keep evidence. Some evidence you can keep for 90 days, you know, past it, 6 months. Mm-hmm. Some of them you keep forever.
Right.
Forever. So she's responsible for all of that.
So AJ, what type of support does the organization provide to evidence supervisors like Ebony throughout the state, where they can communicate amongst each other? Or is there a centralized location that they could share best practices? Is anything done like that through the organization?
What we have right now for our members is, which, you know, if any of them do become one of our members, We have a discussion group. It's a private membership board, private membership forum where people can post different questions. And so what can happen is an evidence custodian can talk with their chief, and maybe she has some questions. That chief can then go ahead and put that question out to our entire membership. Hey, have you guys been experiencing this issue? What did you do to when you had this issue arise and things like that? So we have this great resource of our 1,400 members who can really just all chime in on these different issues if there is one that such as that arises.
All right, Sean, we're going to go back to you. As a CSO, what's your primary responsibility? I mean, what's your from your point of view, right? What's your main focus that gives you the most pride every day as a CSO?
I think basically just seeing a smile on the residents' faces every time they see law enforcement here. I think this community is a community that really respects the police, which is a definitely shout out to our chief, our city manager. But pretty much my day, you know, consists of helping the residents, you know, of this town. And I mean, of course, we have, you know, our procedures, our daily things that we have to get to. But the job pretty much consists of, you know, trying to deal with the residents and make sure that their experience, you know, in Highland Park is just, you know, top tier. So, you know, my day pretty much starts out either real quiet or real loud. It kind of just depends on the calls. But I mean, we handle it all, you know, I mean, everything that's pretty much non-emergency, but we also support the officers with emergency calls, you know, accidents, traffic and all that. But I mean, we do anything from, you know, vehicle lockouts to running down and chasing dogs, which, you know, I've kind of lost a lot of weight doing in this town, just ordinances that, you know, we just try to patrol and, you know, just answering calls. So, you know, it's just a plethora of things that, you know, I do hear more than I did when I was a CSO at Northwestern. But, you know, just being out in the field and, you know, just helping the citizens and, you know, just communicating with them to just help their experience, you know, make it seem like Highland Park is what it is, which is a great town for people to live in.
Yeah, I'll tell you, you know, this position, they're a jack of all trades. And I watch the work that they do. Yeah, they write parking tickets, right? And I'll tell you right now, people get more crazy about parking tickets than speeding tickets. So I give them so much credit on how they have to handle those people.
In Highland Park, Lou? People go crazy about a parking ticket? That's hard.
On occasion. Sean, on occasion?
Hard to believe.
You know, it's the $25 ones that are most ones that are
that drives them nuts. But they have to be able to deal with that. And this guy is cool as the other side of the pillow, man. I'm telling you, you this guy never gets rattled. You hear him on the radio; he's amazing. And all of our CSOs and our civilian staff really truly are. But he does things I would want to do. I'm going to tell you right now, I'm so happy we have him. I would much rather go into a dark building looking for somebody that might have a gun than deal with some of the animals that he's had to deal with and some of the craziness he. And that's the truth. I'm like, I watch him and I'm in awe, you know, the things that they do. So they're jacks of all trades. They get strange calls. They're just basically they're there for community service, but they do enforcement as well. Like I said, for parking a lot, parking traffic control and emergency incidents, they're trained for that. But I will tell you, this particular guy, what stands out to me is, you know, July 4th, 2 years ago, you know, here's a guy working a traffic post, unarmed, you know, they're not armed like police officers. He's working a traffic post when everything went south with our shooting. And he stood his ground and he helped people. He did not flee. He did not run away. I mean, again, the guy's not armed, you know, and he was there. I will tell you as a personal story, my family, you know, connected with him and he was just such a calm, reassuring voice in that crazy, crazy moment. So here, you know, again, he's a CSO. He's not been through police academy or police training. He's been through other types of training, but what a valuable, valuable guy, you know, and it just speaks to really, again, the work they do. The people I just don't think know, you know, they might see him out there writing a ticket and being unhappy. That may be the one thing CSOs, you know, that the people may not be in love with, but boy, they'll come and get that raccoon out of your house or, you know, help, you know, whatever, alligators or whatever else they find in there. And they'll help get in your car when you get your car, you know, lock your keys in the car. So they provide a lot of service, but they're also there, you know, kind of putting themselves out there at risk like our officers. So really, really to be commended, truly the work they do.
All right. We're going to go down to Melissa. So you keep the, schedule. So what type of crazy things come through and what type of crazy requests Do you put on Chief's bird calendar? And do you like be like, yeah, no, that's not a right fit? I mean, you know, you show the typical and the crazy.
So I try to keep the crazy away from the schedule because we don't want it in the office. So I'll try to handle some things and get them to other people before we actually get them on his schedule. But yeah, my day is kind of, you never know what it is when you walk in. It might be a lot of chief stuff. It might be getting officers signed up for the academy. Recently, I've been helping review reports and records, starting the accreditation manager track for the department. So it's just kind of, we do a lot up here.
Yeah, so I was just going to say she's also very pivotal in our when it comes to our federal accounting of like our statistics for the, you know, for the federal government. She's very much involved in that. She does so much. We like, and she, you know, the biggest thing for me, she has amazing rapport with all the officers. They all love her. Like, and they come up here all the time and they drop anchor and they'll sit there and talk, and, you know, and they, and I truly have an open door policy. She can attest to that. But the guys, you know, some people had never, when I found out that some guys said, hey, chief, I had never been in the chief's office, you know, and I was like, wow. So we started making sure that they were, you know, that this was a comfortable place for everybody when we took over. And, so they come up here all the time, they sit down and they chat with her, and believe me, I get all the deets from the grapevine through Melissa, because she keeps me well tuned to what's going on in the back channels of the PD. So I appreciate that, because, you know, these are things that I wouldn't always know, and it's important that that I do know some of these things. Some of it I just kind of, you know, put in my pocket. Some things is good to hear, because some, you know, sometimes officers are not always you know, willing to come forth with certain things that they pass to her, which gets to me. And I think they know that it's going to get to me, you know, so they share it with her. She shares it with me, and then I can act on some of these things. So it's so it helps a lot. But it's just amazing that she has that rapport with the rank and file at the DeKalb Police Department. So I appreciate her for what she does in regard to that as well. So.
What's the biggest piece of gossip right now going around the DeKalb?
You don't want to know.
You do not. Yeah.
No, I kind of do. I'm serious.
Hey, Dave, we have to talk offline.
All right, we'll talk offline. All right, we'll let it dead out. All right, I want to go back to Ebony. Ebony, you came from records, and then you go into evidence. And what was the biggest shocker for you going, keeping records of everybody, what's going on down there in O'Fallon, you know, the hotbed of crime? And then going into the evidence room there and keeping track of everything. I mean, what was the biggest transition for you? And what's the craziest thing that you would never have thought that you would have seen in the evidence room while you as you were in records or just as a regular civilian?
Well, I'm still in the learning process at this point, and I haven't had like a crazy thing yet.
We're pretty tame down here.
Yeah. So, I mean, my main thing is I catch a lot of the officers' mistakes because the evidence has to be packaged a particular way. And if it's not, I have to send it back. So I'm constantly rejecting things and sending emails, having them make necessary corrections before it comes into evidence. And just making sure that I'm maintaining the proper chain of custody and finding that balance for myself with this position and also in dispatch.
And also dealing with the immense smell of marijuana that is in the evidence room. You just walk by it and it just smells like weed.
Yeah.
She has to sit in it all day long. So
yeah, I don't smell it anymore.
Yeah. So she has lost her entire sense of smell, which is great.
Has your consumption of Fritos or Doritos increased since she's in that position?
Yeah, she brought up a great point, like with records and evidence is, you know, we tout our officers, you know, are great officers and do great things. But, you know, we make mistakes, you know, especially in reports. I remember with records, getting reports back with red marks, like I was back in high school or college, you know, because they would read over those reports before we had to type them all in and had spell check. But you know, now it's pretty commonplace. You know, officers get in a hurry. You know, they do a great job on the street, but when they're packaging evidence, they miss something. So it's important to have that person with the that attention to detail there to make sure. Because, like I said before, it's that liability. It's when you go to court and they look at that evidence and it's like, is this packaged correctly? You know, has this been tampered with? Just that little bitty thing that that defense attorney is going to pick on. So it's really important for her to maintain that that chain of custody, you know, and driving back and forth from the lab and taking all that stuff. There's a ton of stuff that she does every day that people would just never know about.
I'm going to go back to Sean. So, Sean, looking at what the officers do on a daily basis and looking at what Lou does every single day, is there any desire for you to transition from a CSO into a police officer and go back to the academy or go to school to get the proper accreditation to become an actual police officer? Or are you good where you're at as a CSO for the rest of your career?
I mean, honestly, I kind of thought about that when I was a little bit younger. I might be past the age, but it definitely is something that I toyed with here and there. I've heard a lot of people tell me that I'd be a great officer, you know, which is kind of, you know, a testament to the things I've learned and the things I've seen. But it definitely would be great to be an officer here. Like I said, I'm not really sure if that's, you know, my path. At this point, I am very happy where I am now. The environment is something that I enjoy coming to, you know, every day. I think that's the biggest thing is being happy when you wake up to go spend, you know, 8, 9, 10, 12, 15 hours of your day somewhere. So, like I said, it is something that I think would be great, you know, career-wise. So, I mean, I have been toying with it. I haven't really thought about it, you know, in, you know, recent, you know, years or months. But like I said, I really don't know my path, you know, from, you know, from now to, you know, the end. But I think the journey's still being, you know, written as I'm going through it.
Yeah, well, I know a guy. Yeah, I know a guy. So a guy named Lou. So yeah. How does he?
Hold on. Let me throw this out there. Yeah, he's absolutely right. This guy's got the perfect temperament to be a cop. There's no doubt about it. But in a roundabout way, like I said, July 4th, he is. I mean, he may not have the firearm or all the necessary training, you know, that we go through the police academy, the official. But on that day, the man acted like, you know, like a police officer. I mean, he's there and they're out there. And any given day, they could be providing first aid. I mean, they're trained in first aid. They're trained. So a lot of the aspects of what we do as police officers, he does already. I mean, there are a lot of them. Again, enforcement. Certain enforcement he doesn't do because he's not pulling cars over per se because you need to be a sworn officer. But there's a lot of similarities in the work we're doing already. My big worry is, you know, I don't want to lose him. Hey, if he becomes a cop, great. I mean, I think he'd do a fantastic job. But unbeknownst to me, he has his own podcast that he's been doing for about a year now. Yeah, so he's a shill. He's here. He knows how to do a podcast. I'm hoping he doesn't take off and make that his next job. So podcast on sports, correct?
Absolutely.
Yeah, this guy's got a podcast. So a competing podcast. What is your podcast called?
It's called Unpopular Opinions.
Unpopular Opinions. Yeah. So check that out, everybody. I'm going to go watch it. I did not know that when I asked him to be on this, that he's actually got some more experience than me. So,
well, how would Sean and others like Sean, who are CSOs, make that transition, Lou? I mean, what type of encouragement do chiefs, you know, do chiefs have for their CSOs and a path for CSOs that might consider it and might want to investigate that career path? How do you guys as chiefs help your CSOs or civilians that are administrative assistants or running the evidence who want to transition from that civilian position into a law enforcement, official law enforcement, you know, with a gun and a badge and all that stuff?
Yeah, I mean, so it's a good question. And we certainly see that for some. Everybody's different. I mean, some people get into it, into the profession, into law enforcement because they want to contribute. But maybe that isn't what they want to do. You know, Sean had some interest in it and maybe still does. But there are other people who get into it that just want to be affiliated with law enforcement, want to contribute to the greater good. But maybe, you know, doing the whole police thing and the shift work or whatever isn't what they're interested in. That's what's nice about our our industry. There are a lot of opportunities for you to contribute to public safety. Again, and that's what this whole week is about, not having to be the uniformed police officer out there. But there certainly are a lot of community service officers, and even I think dispatchers have come kind of gone both ways. But people who get into the business that he's in and sees, oh, maybe that would be a good fit for me. And then, yeah, they would go through the process like anybody else. They take the test and you know, go through the academy. But there is that natural nexus because some people get into it not sure what policing is all about and then look at the police role and say, oh, maybe I am a good fit for that. It's something I want to do. But like I said, I think the vast majority of our civilian employees across the state get involved in law enforcement because they want to participate, you know, in the greater good and be part of the solution. But maybe being the police themselves, that isn't exactly what they wanted to do. And I think that's very laudable and you know, respectable. And we're just fortunate. We could not do the work we do. I know these other chiefs will say it. We'd be dead in the water. You know, the support staff, the work they do is just incredible. And that's why it deserves to be highlighted.
Hey, Melissa, my assistant is 8 months pregnant. She's going to be going down any day now. So I was just wondering if you want to take on some part-time stuff up here in Northbrook, because I'm going to be a complete disaster for about 3 months. You know, just, you guys are on mute. You guys, can we hear you?
Yeah, so that's so three. Again, knowing you with your assistant, and if you're not going to have one, I am very concerned about you.
Yeah.
Very concerned about you and my mortgage that I'm applying for.
So. Thank God your daughter's closing in a couple of weeks because that's going to be a disaster. Yeah. All right, so you're
AJ had her hand up, Dave. I think she threw her hand up. AJ had her hand up.
Dave. Oh, AJ, I'm sorry.
No, it's okay. I really identified with some of the things that people were saying about how, you know, they wanted to be in the law enforcement field, but maybe they couldn't go to the academy and stuff like that. Because me personally, that's kind of what happened to me, is I had aged out of it and I was not able to kind of go that route, but I wanted to help the law enforcement profession. That was one of the biggest reasons why I joined the Illinois Association of Chiefs of Police, is I wanted to help the helpers. I wanted to do what I could. And it's interesting that Ebony also came from a journalism background, because I also did as well. And that was partially part of it, is like I was seeing so much about what law enforcement was going through and, you know, the difficulties they faced. And I wanted to do whatever I could to help. So there's a lot of different ways that civilians can get involved in law enforcement. And I just wanted to kind of say there's a lot of different ways, and we would always welcome more.
Hey, Melissa, you had mentioned that your husband was a police officer. Maybe David mentioned that. Your husband was a police officer. How does that relationship and your experience with him being in the Army and him being a police officer help you do your job the way that you do it?
Well, I think I'm very familiar with being around cops and kind of how they are. So coming into this environment wasn't shocking for me, just because we're always around them. It's interesting for our relationship now. My husband's a lieutenant in Hampshire, and so it's a recent promotion, but we can kind of bounce things off of each other. Hey, how do you guys do this here? This is what we're doing here. You know, so it's an interesting dynamic.
All right. Ebony, what do you tell your friends that say you work at the police department? Why do you work at the police department? You know, what type of insight do you give your friends and your family about the inner workings of the O'Fallon Police Department that would open their eyes? Like, you wouldn't believe what's going on, what we just saw today. You know, what type of stories can you share with us that you share with your friends and your family?
Honestly, I don't share many stories with my friends and family. When I tell people what I do, they always are really excited. They think it sounds like fun, since I do both. And when I'm asked about, especially for the dispatch side, I have to tell them that there is a high level of multitasking, and you have to have really good listening skills as well. And there's a lot going on, and if you're not paying attention, you can miss things, important things, actually. So it takes a certain type of person to be able to handle all of that. And not everyone is a good fit, but you know, but I, of course, there's stories, but I don't really.
And she can share with us. You know.
And she sees she's in a unique position because she sees everything as a records clerk. She had access to every single ticket that came through, every single report. As a telecommunicator, she has access to all of the 911 calls that come in. And as an evidence, she sees every case, all of the little bitty things that come in with the different cases that are going on. So she really, I mean, we talk about confidentiality is like a huge thing. So, you know, you don't want people out there talking about it, Dave. You know, this is not what we want. People just
between us.
Yeah. So it's funny. It, you know, one of the things, too, like with FOIA's and acronym, right? Freedom of Information Act, huge change in what's going on in records with what they're dealing with now is as they're dealing with all of these Freedom of Information Act requests that come in and our body cameras. A lot of people don't know this, but when our body cameras, when somebody does a Freedom of Information Act on our body cameras, it takes about 10 minutes for every minute of footage that they need to redact out. So our records clerks and our evidence custodian help out with that. They're sitting at computers going through body camera footage for hours on end doing all this stuff, just getting this information out. I mean, a lot of stuff that's some mundane stuff, but I mean, obviously she gets to see some pretty fun and pretty interesting things. And I think one of the things that I love is the fact that she sits there and she wears the O'Fallon Police Department patch on her shirt. It makes me proud because, you know, as a police officer, you know, our officers are proud to be officers, but I see it in our civilians as well. And you said that she's proud to be associated with the O'Fallon Police Department. And that is like the biggest testament to what, you know, for me as a chief to see our civilians proud to wear that patch, to wear that city of O'Fallon and to represent us. It's very humbling for me as a chief, and I'm sure for the rest of the chiefs as well.
Yeah, I would concur with that 100%, Kirk. And you talk about, like, I laugh about Melissa because she's experienced a lot of things. It wasn't too long ago when the detectives were going to an autopsy, and boy, she took off. Boy, I was calling her name from the office, and I didn't hear. I was like, she must. I was like, where you at? She's like, oh, I went to the autopsy. I was like, okay. So she gets to see a lot and experience a lot in her position, which, you know, which, like I said, she loves to do. But we also had the biggest snitch in town was her daughter. So I use her all the time. She would tell me when pop-up parties were going to come up at the college. She's like, she was our best snitch. Well, we could count on Melissa's daughter for that. And she came in. She's like, just so you know, they're going to have a pop-up party. It's going to be over here. And she's on the page and she's listening and she's getting all the information for the PD. I was like, so it's weird how all these things are intertwined, you know, through the chief's office, but mostly through Melissa.
I got a question for Sean. Would you rather chase a raccoon, try to get a raccoon out of a garage in Highland Park, or fight with Mrs. Cohen or Goldberg in front of Once Upon a Bagel about a parking ticket?
You know,
asking for a friend.
I enjoy their sandwiches so much. So I compromise. So yeah, 100%. I'd rather chase the raccoon.
All right, Chiefs, I'll throw it to you to give recognition and ask, you know, put the spotlight. I'll go around and have you guys each ask one question to your civilian officers there, employees, I should say. I got scolded for calling everybody a civilian officer earlier. You know, so Chief Brogman, what question would you like to ask Ebony down there, or say something nice about what all the great things that she does?
Well, she's had the unique perspective to work for three different chiefs. I'd like to know who your favorite out of
be careful, Kurt.
You're on the clock.
Yeah. Obviously, he's my favorite.
That was a loaded question, and your salary review will be done at 12 o'clock today. So perfect time.
She's union, so she's stuck.
So for high school girls out there and guys, you know, if you were to speak in front of a high school or a local college about jobs and future employment, what would you talk to them about, Ebony, about getting involved in the police force or helping out behind the scenes?
Well, I would first suggest coming in for a tour and probably doing what we would call like sit-alongs, mm-hmm. Where you can like follow us, I guess, for a day and where we explain our job and you can see what we do. I think that's the best way to introduce to anyone, really, kind of like an internship. So.
To somebody who has like an 18-year-old or somebody going through college, not really sure, just come on in and check it out, right? You know, you'd be amazed at what this job, and it might not be at O'Fallon because you might be holding down the job, but a bunch of police forces around you that are always looking for good people.
It's like Lou said, there's a lot of opportunities to be part of, you know, the organization without being a police officer. You know, we have our telecommunicators, we have our records clerks, we have our evidence custodians, we have our CSOs, we have CSOs as well. So, you know, being a police officer is not for everybody, but being part of that, and like what AJ said, is helping the helpers, you know? And I don't even say helping the helpers because she's a helper. I mean, she's one of the first people when she's in the records, she is the face of the organization. When somebody shows up into our lobby, she's usually smiling. Yeah, there you go. Yeah. she's always smiling. So it's a great thing to have somebody there that is very welcoming and shows a good representation of what our organization's like to help people out. So,
Sean, I went to Northern many moons ago, and there were general education courses that I had to cover before I went to the business school, right? Mm-hmm. So if you came in and talked to one of those gen ed classes or a local community, or you went to HB High School or you went to Oakton Community or a CLC and talked to them, what are some of the things you touch on about becoming a CSO or involved in law enforcement?
I would just say the number one thing is you want to have a passion for what it is you do. I think the biggest thing that young people don't realize is that when they get into a career, they want to make generational wealth. Coming into Highland Park, I've seen officers here retiring from their 20 and they're still relatively young. So I think the biggest thing is having options. You want to be able to get into a career that you enjoy, that you wake up to every single day, where it's not about the money, where, you know, it's about the time that you spend. Now, don't get me wrong, the money is great, but, you know, you really just want to enjoy a career that you're going to get involved in, you know, 20, 25, you know, some odd years. And the thing about it is that when you're done with that career, you're still relatively young enough to have another option to either move forward with that career or to do something else. So it's just about setting yourself up for what it is that you want to do for your future and really thinking about that.
And not putting the spotlight on you, but other than being a plate picker when you have lunch with Lou, you know, he reaches mm-hmm. over and grabs things off of your plate while you're sure. eating it. What are some of his other major weaknesses that you think he needs to work on?
You know, I don't know. I think the biggest weakness he worked on is just being probably the, you know, one of the greatest chiefs I've been around.
Yeah,
I see. You know, so I mean, honestly,
nice I think tried, Dave.
He went at you.
One thing I appreciated was when I came into Highland Park, you know, I think maybe like within a day or two, I got a message and they said the chief wanted to meet with me. I'm thinking, oh my God, I haven't been here that long. What have I done? So, you know, I learned more about him in the 15-minute meeting that, you know, it just about than I was with the chief that I was with for 14 years prior. So I just think the relationship that he builds, you know, with his subordinates, you know, with his team, as, you know, he would call us, is just something that's kind of a godsend. I really appreciate that. So if that was a weakness, then, you know, I guess he doesn't have any strengths then.
Nice try.
When you're ordering eggs, order six because you'll eat four and you'll leave two for him. So, Melissa, down up there in DeKalb, for somebody that's interested, you know, you've got to be super organized, right? Because I know the chiefs, I have relationships with a lot of chiefs. I know they're going to this meeting over here, and then they've got to go to that meeting over there, and then they got to go to meet this administrator over here, and then they've got to talk to elected officials and do boot shining with those people and kiss rear ends where they don't want to be. They're all over the place. So for somebody that wants to get into your type of position and work as a chief's right arm. What type of organizational skills, and what would you tell somebody that aspires to have that position in the future? What type of skills would they need, and how do they prepare for your job if that's what they want eventually?
Well, I think they just kind of have to be a jack of all trades, really, because you don't know what's coming at you from day to day or what you need to keep, you know, under control, or just make sure that everybody's where they need to be and you've done everything you need to do. It's just kind of being able to juggle a lot of balls at one point, you know, in the air and not letting them drop.
And the autopsy. How awesome was that? I mean, full disclosure, my wife's a physical therapist, and she had to do a cadaver, right? And just, and I went to visit her at college, and she's like, "Come on, let's go. I'll show you around." She's like, "Oh, you know, that's a cadaver room." I'm like, "What the hell's a cadaver room?" So she took me in there. No, just
like one of my most fun days. Like it was, I've always wanted to go, and every officer's like, "What's wrong with you? It's gross.
Yes.
It stinks." I didn't have any of that. It was the coolest thing to just see what goes on inside of our bodies in person.
Yeah, there's something seriously wrong. That's all another.
Hey, look, she definitely enjoyed it, Dave. And let me just say this one thing about her that what I really appreciate about her is that. I have a lot of one-on-one conversations with her. She knows I bounce everything off of her. So, you know, policy decisions, even though, you know, I have a command, you know, staff and we go through it. But then there are times when, you know, it's just her and I in here and out. I ask her, you know, give me your, you know, real no shit assessment. She gives it to me. She doesn't pull any punches, which I appreciate. You know, she doesn't cater to me because I'm the chief. She'll say, "Hey, I wouldn't do that," or "I don't agree with that," or, you know, she'll be honest and transparent with me, which I appreciate. And she's always been like that from the beginning with me. And I think that's why we're a good team, including the deputy chief as well. You know, and he'll say the same things. If he was here, she does the same things for him. Sometimes all three of us, you know, we have our little powwows and we kind of, you know, beat up on just different situations that have occurred here at the PD. But she's always given us that civilian side of it. Like, I would, you know, like we always look at it as police officers. Sometimes our brains go only one way. And then she'll say, "Well, did you think about A, B, or C?" And we're like, "Yep, that's why you're here. Because otherwise we wouldn't have thought about that." So she does that for us as well. And I just appreciate her for that. So,
well, I was going to go around the horn and have everybody end with that. So I'll start with Lou, and then I'll bounce it over to Chief Brogelman, and then we'll end it. So, you know, basically what Dave just did is a recap, Lou.
Yeah, so great show. Really, really appreciate you all and the work you're doing. I can tell you, just starting with Sean, we're grateful to have him here, and our police department became better because he took the opportunity to come here. He truly, truly, truly made us better. Here's a guy, much like you all, who's committed basically to a life of service. He's serving others, you know. He's doing it in this capacity, and again, he's doing things I wouldn't want any part of, and he's the first guy I'm calling, any animal call, anything like that. This is my man right here, but fortunate to have him. And all of our civilian staff, you know, again, it was so important to me, and I'm grateful that the, you know, Illinois Chiefs, you know, the decision was made to do this on our own. We tried again at the state level, and they've got a bunch of different, you know, reasons and things that why it wouldn't have been a good fit for them to do a week like this. So I'm grateful to the Illinois Chiefs to really recognize all of those unsung heroes out there. Those people who contribute day in and day out to make sure that public safety in Illinois is, you know, at its top, and really, again, help us do the work that we could not do and accomplish the mission we could not accomplish. So, you know, grateful to all of you throughout the state, and certainly, certainly grateful to my team and to Sean. I feel I've got an incredible team. All kidding aside, you know, we have a good relationship, and it's because I respect them and respect the work they do. I truly do value the work he does out there. And again, personal connection for me. He really took care of my family on July 4th, and I'll be forever grateful to him for that. And it just shows you don't know what you're going to be called to do at any time in any role in a police department. And that's what I think our public needs to really understand and value, that these folks are out there doing really, really good work and committed to each and every one of you out there.
Chief Bruggeman?
I don't know how I can top that. That was great.
You can't.
I just say thank you to Ebony, and thank you to all of our other civilian employees for doing what they do every day, keeping us in line and keeping us moving the mission forward, because it would not happen without them. It is essential for us. So thank you very much.
Thank you. AJ, do you want to just recap what the ILACP is going to be doing next week during the week of recognition?
Yes, we have our whole week for law enforcement civilian personnel appreciation, and we're going to do this every single year, starting with the first full week of June. That is going to be from the Sunday to the Saturday, and so that starts this Sunday. We're very, very excited to be able to do this for all law enforcement civilian personnel out there. They are so supportive to all of the efforts that law enforcement does. And we're just happy to be able to do this for them. And we're, again, every single year, and I'm looking forward to hearing more of the stories behind some of the civilian personnel in our different agencies that our members are from, so that I can highlight those different stories and highlight those different individual civilian personnel. So just another shout out to anybody listening. If you've got a really key player who is a civilian personnel at your agency, please send me their photos, send me a little story about them. We would love to highlight them in not just our social media, but perhaps even our magazine and our newsletter.
And I think the association did put out a press release already, right?
Yes, we did.
So that should be out there. So we'll definitely try to get our media friends, you know, engaged next week, so that, you know, hopefully we can get the word spread. It always starts off slow, but I'm sure, you know, as the years go by, we'll definitely build that up and get our folks due recognition. I know here our city is going to recognize our staff in some way. So I'm sure as the word starts spreading, you know, we'll finally get to where we should have been a long time ago.
Free sandwiches at Once Upon a Bagel. Is that what you guys are doing?
He earned it today. There's no doubt. He said exactly everything I told him to say. Right. So,
Chief Byrne, Chief Bruggeman, great sandwiches. Just saying. Just want to say. All right. This has been another episode of Behind the Badge, Illinois. Thanks for listening. If you're looking to purchase a new home or refinance your existing home, give me a call. Thanks for watching, everybody. Be safe.